Hello and welcome to Artists Soar. This is a podcast for artists by three artists. We discuss all aspects of being artists, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The goal of each podcast is to provide solutions so artists can focus on their creativity and soar above. I'm Rachel Harshenko.
Jules McCullough.
Stephanie Weaver.
So hello, everyone. And today we have a really special guest with us today. Stephanie's going to be doing more of the introduction, but Nathan Hughes, and he's from the land down under. So you'll recognize his accent probably as good as ours. But I'm going to let Stephanie give the formal introduction.
All right. So we've got with us Nathan Hughes. Nathan, he reached out to me because one of his writers on his website called Art Ignition, follows my oil paintings and really liked some of the products that I offer, and particularly the intro to oil painting online class. And so he became an affiliate. And you know how I kind of am, guys. I got to make sure people are real. And it turns out Nathan is real. And he is amazing. Like I said, he started a website and is the founder of Art Ignition. Art Ignition is a collaboration of artists to provide real, actionable advice based on firsthand real world experience that would truly impact artists' creative endeavors in a concrete way. So as you can imagine, he fits in really well with what we have to offer because we are here to help artists. And not only that, but Nathan also has 10 years of experience building and ranking websites on Google. That's not something we see every day with artists. So we were super excited to get him on board to talk with you guys and us about search engine optimization specifically geared to artists. So how to do, Nathan? Is that all right?
Thank you.
Okay. So Nathan is with us today to really kind of dive into search engine optimization, or SEO. So was somebody,
I think one of the first questions is, what exactly is that?
Oh, what's SEO? Oh, yeah. Good, good.
Got it. All right. Well, so SEO, like you said before, it stands for search engine optimization. So what does that mean? So I'll talk about Google primarily, but you can also think of search engines as like Pinterest is a visual search engine. Even the search bar in Etsy, you know, that Etsy is a search engine specifically around crafts and arts and stuff like that. But I'll talk mainly about Google in this regard. And what search engine optimization is, it's a machine trying to figure out how to serve the correct content for someone's search. So if you're searching on Google for, best oil paints or something like that, you know, the kinds of searches that show up will determine, are there to, provide the best answer to your query. So what search engine optimization is, in order to help Google understand what my content is about, there are certain things I need to meet. Google's looking for something, a lot of different criteria to firstly understand what the content's about and to determine whether it's relevant for the kind of searches that you would like to show up for. So that's a very broad overview of what search engine optimization stands for.
But
what
it is very important, correct? I mean, you're not going to get found any other way. I mean, so how do we go about thinking about it and working on it as artists?
Yeah, perfect. So the first thing you got to think about is ultimately you're trying to get your content in front of someone looking for something. Okay. So, think about your audience. Firstly, in terms of, where are they is always a good place to start. Now, this could be both in person and online. So let's just say you're a gallery owner and you're wanting to, your target audience is actually people in your local area. So that's one thing to consider. But then you can also think about, you know, where they are online. So Google, they're going to be on Google, but Pinterest is also a good one. You know, if they're looking for artwork to buy, they're going to be on Etsy. So there's a lot of places where they could be. So think about where they're at, and then that will kind of determine the kind of optimization you need to do. So let's just do local to online. I'll do a comparison there. So let's just say you live in, I'm just going to put out a random city. Let's just say they live in Sydney. You're an artist in Sydney. I know Sydney because I grew up there. You know, you're going to target, you're going to have to see, okay, what are people searching for in Sydney? And that could be art gallery in Sydney or watercolor artists in Sydney. So that's a very straightforward example of the kind of keywords, and I'll talk about keywords in a sec, that you would look for and try rank for when it comes to your kind of content that you're creating. So the strategies you would do would be slightly different. Instead of focusing primarily on your website, you might have a what's called a Google My Business profile. And a Google My Business profile, if you've ever looked up like a locksmith or a plumber, you get the map that pops up on Google and you click it and it has the profile of that business. That's actually a Google My Business profile. And that really does help you get up, show up on maps, show up in what we call the local search results. So that's, you know, the thing to look into around this kind of audience and trying to get that local audience in your local area is you want to look at what's called local SEO, which works slightly different to various other forms of SEO. But so to jump back, I mentioned keywords. So keywords are what people search for. So if you're in Google and you type in, you know, like I said, best oil paint, or, you know, local gallery Sydney, that they're the keywords that, you know, people are typing in and searching for. And you get similar things in, you know, definitely on Pinterest, definitely on, you know, these other, you know, search engines that I mentioned. So you want to kind of figure out what are these people searching for? And there's a various ways to do that. There's a lot of tools to help you do that. So for example, there's paid tools like Ahrefs, which is like a top tier premium one. There's a cheaper one, which is like Uber Suggest. And then there's free ones like the Google Keyword Research Tool. So look, I won't go into details with all of them, but these are avenues where you can kind of find out what people are actually searching for. And by asking yourself, okay, what is my audience? Where are they? What are they looking for? It allows me to kind of get a headspace of like, okay, this keyword is probably going to be really, really relevant. This one, you know what? Yeah, Cafe City, I don't need to bother with that. Yeah. Whereas Art Gallery City, maybe that's something I want to look at. Or if you're online, in terms of my audience is global, maybe they're looking for watercolor prints or where to buy oil, oil prints or something like that. So you can look up, okay, well, what are people searching for? And what it also tells you, a lot of these tools, is how many times people are searching for it. And so, you know, if someone's only searching for something maybe once a month, that's probably not going to be a good return on your time, because you obviously have to spend time to try to rank for that, as a keyword that's getting maybe 600 searches a month. So it helps you determine, okay, this is what my audience is looking for. This is like, these are the hyper relevant things that kind of I can offer them. So the link between what my audience wants and what they're looking for and what I can give. And then the search volume kind of helps you determine which one's going to be a better use of my time to try and target. And then there's various things you can do on a website to make sure that your content facilitates that search. But the simple way to determine whether the kind of content I'm writing is what people want to see, if you look at what Google's already ranking for that keyword. So if you type in best oil paint, it's a lot of the time the top 10 results will just show a list of oil paints and maybe a buyer's guide underneath. So that gives you a really good idea of what people are looking for. And you also look at things like, what are the kind of topics and questions people are asking. A lot of them will be on those top 10 pages. A lot of them will also be in people also ask, which is also on the search results. And then there'll be, you know, down the bottom, you'll have, it's called related topics. And so there are other things that potentially you could write about as well. A lot of the answers that you'll find, you know, how long should I write my article? Well, what's the average of the top 5 articles? You know, what topics should I touch on? Well, the answer's already there. So that's my kind of like general advice to people who are new to SEO, want to know, like, what do I write about? Like, how do I target these kinds of keywords now that I've found them? The answer's already there, and it's on the first page of Google for that specific keyword.
Go ahead, Rachel.
Go ahead, Julie.
Okay, so I was going to just ask, and this may be diving too deep too quickly, but, you know, since we're talking to visual artists, obviously image, we're all image heavy. So in regards to images, is it best to do your tags or keywords within a program like Adobe Bridge or Lightroom or something, and then post them to social media, so the tags and stuff are embedded in that image? Or should you be doing that plus putting image tags when you put it on your website or something, and then also having text to support it as a blog post, let's say, on your website? Like, what's the best way to handle images?
And then you've also got the alt text.
Yes, alt text and everything too.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. So there's a lot of different things there. So firstly, regards to social media and the specifics around that, like, I wouldn't say that's my forte, but if I was in that situation, I would, make it easier for whatever that social media account is, understand what your content's about. So I would definitely, put the keyword in putting the keyword in the file name, for example, is a lot better than IMG number, 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 right? There's simple things that you can do that take 2 seconds and can actually have a huge return on investment there. But in terms of, including keywords and descriptive words, so related words as well, can also help. So what do I mean by that? I'll talk about Google, but this can also apply to other search engines, is to determine what a thing is about. They kind of look at supporting words. So what do I mean by that? The example I like to use is the movie Cars by Pixar. Now, if I was to type in Cars, how does it search engine determine, am I talking about Cars the movie, or am I talking about Cars as in the automobile? And what a lot of search engines do, and I can't speak to all of them, but I can definitely speak to Google, is it will look at the supporting words. So, for example, with Pixar, you're going to have words like Pixar, Buzz McQueen, animation, movie, that kind of word. Right. Mm-hmm. So these are supporting words to help the search engine understand the context of what's being shown. And on the flip side, with supporting keywords for automobiles, you're going to have transition, tires, tire change, maybe different brands of cars, that kind of thing. So it's always good to definitely include the main search term you're going for, but don't forget to include maybe some of these other supporting words that kind of help the search engine understand a little bit more the context of what it is you're showing. And in the image, what that can look like is, I would definitely include the main keyword in the file name and probably what's called the alt text. And I'll touch back on that in a sec if people aren't familiar what that is. But, when you have a description, include these other words as well, just to support and help Google understand, while the searchers understand that this is a relevant piece of content for what people are searching for. Now, so the second part, you're talking specifically about what's called image SEO. So optimizing images so it shows up at the top of search results, and in this case, Google Images. So there's a bunch of things you can do with that. In terms of what that looks like is there's a bunch of stuff you need to think about. Like I said, the file name you want to optimize. You just don't want to have, you know, IMG number, number, number dot JPEG. You want to have the keywords that you're targeting in there, whether it's just the short one or maybe, you know, like oil painting, or it could be a little bit more descriptive, you know, oil painting of red flowers. You know, so it's a little, yeah, a little bit more specific, but try and get those, you know, those descriptive words in there. And then that's the foundation there. And then what you want to do is when you upload it and put it on your page, you have the opportunity to include a title and what's called the alt text. Now, the alt text is essentially, the purpose of it is, let's just say you have people who are seeing impaired. And so what would happen is the alt text enables
sometimes it has voice response type thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it enables, it's a description of what the image shows. And so that's what the alt text is it's a description of what the image shows. So you want to be descriptive. You want to say, this is a painting, an oil painting of flowers, red flowers. Yeah, so describe it. But you want to include your keywords in there. And if you can get one or two supporting words in there, even better. It's just a single short sentence describing what the image is about. So, and it also helps Google understand what it's about as well, which is what we're doing. And then you also have the title. And the title, you can just keep it very short. You know, less than 50-60 characters matched, short. Again, describing what it's about, use the keyword in there as well. So they're kind of like fundamentals of all images that you upload. Definitely try to get all that detail in there. And then in terms of the next step is, like you mentioned, include it in content. Make sure it's quite relevant in the content. You know, let's just say you've written a blog post of your favorite oil paintings with flowers, okay? And that top image that you want to rank for oil paintings with flowers is like within, like right up the top underneath that heading. And then like the first, you know, two sentences are about oil painting with flowers, and then you got that image. That's a big relevant signal to Google. It's like, well, the content's about oil painting with flowers. Yeah, the heading is about oil painting with flowers. And then we've got this image that's also saying that we're oil painting with flowers. Great, boom. This is definitely relevant to the kind of stuff we want to show to our audience who are searching for oil paintings with flowers. So that's the next step there. And then taking a step further is another factor that Google also looks at is, okay, you've hit all these solid points on your own website, but it also looks in the greater wide web to see whether this piece of content is actually worth sharing. You know, if people are linking to that content or if it's being shown elsewhere, that's another signal to Google that this is actually a really good piece of content. Like it's a popular image, or it's, you know, it people are willing to link to this piece of content because it's authoritative and has some good information. So that's worth sharing as well. So in terms of your image, once you've got it, let's just say you've got it on your website, or maybe you've done it on your Etsy profile or whatever that might be, syndicate it. And what do I mean by that? The syndication is putting it on other websites. So if you've got a Pinterest account, upload it to Pinterest and Pinterest allows you to link back to where it originally was. So, you've got two things happening there. One, you get Pinterest people finding your images, and then that goes back to your website. But also it's a second indicator that, okay, this is popular. Flickr, it's another one you can syndicate your images on. And there's a variety of other image platforms that you can put it on as well. And these are just those little extra, little more advanced things that you can do if you really want to get a particular image showing up in search results. That's what I do.
So would Behance be like another search engine similar to Flickr, do you think? The Adobe program?
Well, yeah, it's a search engine as well. You know, people are searching for different things. So you apply similar concepts. I'm not familiar with trying to rank on Behance, but it would be the same deal, right? So if you want to show up for oil painting with flowers, type in oil painting with flowers and see what the top people are doing. You know, do they have oil painting with flowers in their title? You know, I would say most of them would. I haven't looked at it, but I'm guessing they probably would. They probably have oil painting with flowers somewhere in the description. The description, I would imagine, has a lot more talks about the image. It's not going to be blank. And again, includes the keywords and maybe the supporting keywords. It can also apply to Behance, I would imagine.
Okay.
I had a question on the links, the inbound and outbound links is what we're talking about. And so if we're doing, so say we we're talking about books or something, would it be a good idea to link it to the books in Goodreads to have that outbound link and then somehow find someone to do an inbound link to whatever we're talking about? Say we did a podcast about that or something. Is that linking the books that we've talked about to like their whatever or Amazon or something like that? So in and outbound links are good then in this situation?
Yeah, absolutely. So it depends on what you're looking to achieve. So if you're writing let's just say you're writing a blog post, which is purely to, you know, the main point of it is I just want to share some really, really good information, provide value and set yourself up as someone who knows a lot about this there's benefits with developing trust and a good relationship with your audience. In those kinds of circumstances, if you found some really good resources that can help other people, absolutely link to them. A friend of mine, he's done some testing on, a page that didn't have any what we call outbound links, so links from my page to someone else's website, compared to, a page that had, 2, 3, 4, 5 links. And he found that the ones that did actually have outbound links did actually a lot better on average. Obviously, there was exceptions in both cases, but on average, you saw more. And they have to be authority. The idea is these pages provide extra value to what I'm writing about. So definitely. In terms of books and stuff like that, yeah, absolutely. Link out. We've mentioned affiliate marketing very briefly at the start. If you do have, for example, Amazon has an affiliate program. If you do link out to Amazon through their affiliate program, you want to make sure though that the link is what we call no follow, and what that means is Google. Imagine Google as these little spiders going out and kind of searching the internet, and the way that it searches the internet and it is through links. It goes down the link rabbit hole essentially, and no follow is essentially telling Google, I don't want your bot to go down this route. And I don't want to actually attribute this as like a resource. And the reason for that is I won't go into the whole deal about it, but essentially if you're getting paid to include that link, which that's what an affiliate link is, then Google doesn't want you to have that formal attribution of like, this is a good resource. That's getting a little bit too technical there, but in general, normal links to really valuable resources, absolutely, that's really good. I would say 2 links. Now, the exception to that where you kind of want to be really careful is, let's just say you have a page where you're trying to sell something. It could be a landing page or your course, or maybe you've got a shop and you're selling print. You want to be a little bit more strict on the outbound links from there, because essentially you want people to buy. And so you don't want them going off into another website and potentially you losing the sale. So you need to be a little bit smarter with the kind of outbound links that you, if you do include them on sales pages or landing pages, just be a little bit more stricter. But for informational blog posts, that kind of stuff, yeah, it's great. Now, in terms of what's called inbound links, these are links from other websites back to your website. And the benefit of this is links pointing to your website are a ranking factor, and they're quite a powerful ranking factor. They're essentially a signal for Google that other people out there in the world like this website enough to link to it. And so that kind of tells Google, like, if they're linking to your oil painting with flowers page from a page that talks about the top oil painting artist, that's a big signal to say this person obviously knows what they're talking about because this person linked to them. So link building is really effective in that regard. And there's various ways you can go about getting links, and I can go into details with that, but I'll just leave it at that because that's a rabbit hole in itself.
So do you, and I think I know that your answer to this question, but when you are downloading, because we've talked about the images, when you're downloading images to your website, do you want it to be a smaller image than what is normal? Like, what is downloadable? But should they be smushed? Should they not be smushed? Should we resize them? That kind of question.
Yeah, cool.
Optimal image size.
Yeah, optimal image size, I guess. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. So this is actually something I failed to mention earlier when we talked about how to get an image ranking. The other thing as well is this is in general with anyone's website, is you want to make sure that the experience for the user is good. And part of that is making sure things load quickly. I'm sure we've all been on a website where you're like, come on, like, hurry up. A lot of people after 3 seconds, if they don't see what they want to see, they'll go elsewhere.
Yeah.
And Google considers that as well as a ranking factor. So what that means with images is you want to make sure that they're optimized and they load quickly. So what's some simple things you can do? Firstly, make sure the image is at the size that it's actually shown. So, let's just say you've taken an image of your artwork and it's a 3 megabyte image and it's, 2000 pixels by 2000 pixels. Okay. But you're showing it at 500 by 500. You've got all this large image that's having to be uploaded when really you only need an image this big. So the first thing you should always do is if you're putting your image on online for the purposes of just showing it off, right? Different if you're sending it obviously to print it or whatever. You want to make sure that it's at the size that's going to be shown. So on your website, that's going to depend on your design of the website. But then with Pinterest, Instagram, all those places, they actually have, you can go online, if you type in like Facebook image sizes or something like that, or Instagram post sizes, that they'll have guidelines. So you want to kind of optimize your image to be the size for either your website or whatever else that you're posting on. And I would, if you're posting it on a website that's not your own, I'm sure you can just type in, Behance image size guidelines, and there'll be some sort of resource there for you. But yeah, resize it. When it's your own website, depending on what you use, for example, WordPress, you can get plugins that essentially will resize your image or, your desktop, but it also consider creating duplicates of that image at different sizes for, tablet and mobile phone. That's something for your readers to research into if they use WordPress. But a lot of things, tools like Behance and Pinterest and Instagram, they kind of automatically do that. But that's something to consider a little bit more advanced if you have your own website. But you want to at least make sure that the images you do upload are at the size that they would show at desktop and no larger. So that's the first thing. And so once you've got that, that 2000 pixel by 2000 pixel image down to the 500 by 500 that it's going to be showing on your website, The next step you can do is you can do what's called compression. And compression is essentially it's a way to reduce the actual file size. So let's just say that 2 megabyte, 2000 by 2000 pixel image, I've reduced it down to, I've reduced it down to 500 by 500, but it's still a megabyte. That's still a lot. So what you can do is, I'm sure you can do this. You can play around in Photoshop as well. Compress the image to essentially reduce the file size. And, if you're doing it on Photoshop or whatever, yes, play around with it, because sometimes if you compress it too much, it looks super grainy and the actual image itself doesn't look that good. So it's about finding that nice balance between file size and obviously the image that's being shown. There are free tools, which literally online, drag and drop. I'll put my image in here and it compresses it and it's usually really good. Off the top of my head, there's one called tinypng.com. And you literally just drag, drop your image in there and it'll just compress it for you and you can just download it. And I find that the quality of the images is really good. It remains good, but the file size can be reduced up to like 90%. So instead of like a megabyte image, I've had it compressed down to 100 kilobyte, which is super quick, like super small and super quick to upload. And by compressing those images, it just means that, yeah, they're smaller file size. And so they'll load faster. So people get to see your beautiful artwork quicker. And Google also likes that because the user experience is better.
Yeah, I know Canva, which I know all of us use. In Canva, you can click this little button. When you download it, you click a little button that says compress my file, and it'll do that. And then you can also adjust the pixel size on a little slider bar. So I usually make things big and then I'll take it down to whatever size. So I know the quality is going to be good and then compress it. And now one of the things that we talked about before, like Jules, Rachel and I on, I think it was in our Etsy bootcamp. When we upload an image, we try and do it at 72 DPI, which will decrease the file size and prevent people from trying to basically print our images and resell them type of thing. And that also helps the pages load faster.
Yeah.
Because I know that's a big concern. Sorry, what did you say, Julie?
No, I was just going to mention that the optimizer I'm using on my website is Imagefy. And I know you can also use Imagefy on their webpage to minimize images that are JPEG or PNG. And it seems to do a really good job as well.
How do you spell that?
Imagify, I think.
Ify. Okay. Imagefy. Mm. Okay.
A quick note on JPEG versus PNG. I would recommend people to use PNG if you've got more flat colors and text. The compression is really good. Whereas if you were to use a JPEG on those kinds of images, you find that sharp line gets real blurred. And sometimes, depending on the compression, that background color could have like blobs of slightly darker or slightly lighter. So for more flat colored stuff with maybe harder edges, PNG is better. But I like JPEG for if you took a photo of all of us here, I'd probably just use a JPEG because, we don't have any text. There's no hard lines or anything like that I want to keep.
That's a great note. That's a really good note. I've never heard that before. That was worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
I'm done. Bye, guys.
Mic drop. I was wondering if you could touch on like the paid SEO and organic SEO, because I know us three really do try to work hard at doing really good organic SEO, everything that we've been talking about. So can you touch kind of quickly, I'm putting that in quotations, the difference between paid and organic?
Yeah, cool. In terms of, I'll use Google as an example again. So when you go into Google, you type in, let's just say you type in oil painting for flowers again. And the first couple of results often, you can see it, they say ad, so they're ads. And then underneath that, you would have, and so that's essentially what our ad advertising is those things at the top. People are bidding to essentially get their results at the top of Google. Whereas underneath those ads is what we call the organic search results. So you have the paid search results, which people are paying to get up there, and they're right at the top. And then you have the organic. And the way they work is very different. Like I mentioned previously, we were talking about organic. You're talking about things that, you know, your website includes that indicate that this is a valuable resource to Google. You know, things like links pointing to those resources. These are all things considered when you're doing SEO. Whereas with paid ads, you are looking at what, you know, you are looking at, okay, what's my audience searching? And what do I want to show up for? But you're paying to be there. And the way paid ads work is essentially you're bidding. You're bidding against other people saying, you know, they're just like, I'll pay 2 cents to be at the top. And you're like, well, I'm going to pay three, you know, and it kind of, that's kind of what's happening in the background. There is a small amount of what, you know, the same aspect of what we consider with organic SEO. So Google does look at your landing page to determine, and your ad copy, the text that you put in your ad, to determine its relevance. So so let's just say, for example, I'm an automobile guy and I want to put an ad to my automobile page, but I'm targeting people looking up oil painting. Google's going to look in that guy, man, that's not relevant. That's not relevant. And so if you had these two pages, right, and they're bidding the same, I've got my automobile guy who's, I don't know what he's thinking, and then I have an artist who actually has an oil painting website, and they're both targeting, they want to both show up at the top of Google for oil painting flowers. This is how they both put out, I'm going to pay 10 cents. Google's going to look at it and go, oh, this guy, he's not that relevant. You know what? This guy gets number one. But sometimes what people do is, my little automobile guy, he's going to actually be like, well, he's paying 10 cents. I'm going to pay 20 cents. And so Google's like, okay, this guy's more relevant, but this guy's paying me a bit more. And so there's this kind of balance, right? And so when you're doing ads, you want to make sure that your copy, as well as even on your ad and also your landing page, is optimized to a degree. You know, you are including the main keyword that you're looking to target. You are including the supporting words in your copy. Now, it's not as strict as SEO. You don't have to include all the minutiae and stuff like that, but definitely things like the user experience, does it load fast? The images load fast? And just some basic things to show, you know, what I'm targeting and what I'm sending people to is relevant. It's still important. And then when considering what keywords you do want to use paid advertising for, you really want to go for the high search intent, the high buying intent kind of keywords. You don't want to search for, you know, you don't want to pay for something that will get a view, but in the end, you're not going to make money on in a short period of time, because ads can be really expensive. And if you're not making that money back in one form or another, you can lose out a lot. And you know, particularly when I first started, I wouldn't say I'm an expert at ads at all, but I've definitely played with it. And I've lost a lot of my own money playing around trying to figure stuff out. So it's best to take it slow. Set a small budget, like, okay, I'm going to play with $100 and I'm going to figure out what works. Maybe do $100 on this ad and I'll do $100 on this ad and let's see which one goes better. Oh, this one goes better. Okay. And then we'll tweak it slightly work it that way, instead of just saying, all right, I'm going to see if I can get 1,000 people to my website, and you spend thousands of dollars and you get nothing. If you're completely new to ads, take it slow. Spend, you know, that little extra bit of money to find just a good course on Udemy or you know, someone reputable, just to learn the foundations of it, and then play small, kind of get a feel for it, know, kind of test things to see what works. And then once you can see things are working, then you can increase your budget. And that's how you can get traction through ads without having to sell your house.
Yeah. So I had a question about redirects. You know, obviously having a URL that's relevant to what you do mm-hmm. as a business owner is going to be more beneficial than having a URL that says, you know, Julie Designs versus mm-hmm. Julie is a watercolor artist, as an example. So if you're redirecting, you've purchased up several URLs and you redirect them to your website, is that still beneficial for SEO based on a lot of the changes that have happened over Google as it was years ago, or does it not even matter anymore?
There's a couple of things to consider there. In terms of the actual URL, a long time ago, having the keyword in your URL was a really big ranking factor. Now, it does impact it slightly, but honestly, it's like in terms of SEO, it's not a huge issue. In fact, if your URL is more towards building a brand, that is going to be more effective in the long run than, you know, Julie's watercolors, you know, and very, very specific. Yeah, Julie's watercolors of flowers, you know. So, because one, you're limited to just watercolors with flowers now. But anyway, that's the point. So, in terms of an SEO factor, it's very minuscule. So, I honestly, if people are worrying about it, I wouldn't. The thing you want to consider is the branding. Is it on brand? You know, and if it is, great, awesome. Double down on other aspects that are going to make you money. I wouldn't worry about getting the perfect URL. Think about the user. Does the user see that URL and go, I'm in the right spot. This is great. Now, if for whatever reason you did want to change your URL, you know, your website. So a 301 redirect is essentially saying to Google, you know, this URL is now over here. It's the permanent redirect. We've now, all of our traffic should go here.
Right.
And you definitely want to do that. If you ever change a URL, whether it's a site-wide thing or maybe it's a page. Let's just say, for example, you've changed the URL of a page or you've deleted a page because I don't sell that item anymore or I don't really want to talk about that anymore. You still want to set up a redirect. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, people might have bookmarked that page. And so if they come to your website, you know, the last thing they want to see is, oh, it's like a 301 page no longer exists, right? They kind of want to be redirected either to, you know, maybe you've updated it and created a newer piece of content that has a different URL, covers the same topic. You redirect them to that. But if you just like, you don't, it's just, you can just redirect them to your homepage. So that's a good practice just from a user experience point of view. But then from an SEO point of view, you know, let's just say you've gotten a couple of links to your old page that you've either changed the URL or you've removed. Now, you know, that, all that positive, good vibes from Google, right? That's been sent to you from these links. It's got nowhere to go. And so you actually don't benefit from that attribution because, in fact, you're sending people to something that no longer exists. But if you include a 301 redirect, you essentially are able to point that good vibe, so to speak. We call it link juice in the industry. So look up SEO link juice and it'll give you a whole rundown of what that means. But essentially, it will point that benefit from those links to that new page or to your homepage, whatever that is. So you still get the benefit from those links. Now, so that's something I do all the time if I've changed the URL, whether it's a whole site-wide thing or just the page thing, both from a user experience and Google point of view. There's a bunch of other things around 301 redirects, but that's the fundamentals and the basics.
That again is something really important because if you've had a piece that is sold out or you've sold the original or something like that, you can redirect to the prints or redirect to your new collection or whatever. So that's some great information. Again, worth the price of admission here. Do we have any more questions, guys? Because we are at 45.
Wow, that went by fast.
Yeah,
I know it did.
And I wrote down all these notes. I got so many notes. So really great information, Nathan.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it.
The funny thing is we, like he said, this is just the tip of the iceberg. So if we had to narrow it down to maybe 3 to 5 things that artists could do like right now, what would you recommend?
So when it comes to SEO, and again, it all depends on their goals. So get really clear on your goals and who you're wanting to market to. You know, whether it's local, online, and then figure out what it is they're searching for. And I've recommended a couple of tools. You know, there's definitely so many guides out there on keyword research to find out what these things are. But you want to filter those keywords through, you know, who's my target audience and what are they searching for? That will essentially, you know, if your goal is to make money through your art, whether, you know, that could be through selling maybe your own art course, your art prints or something like that, have that as the end goal in mind and think about, okay, is this kind of relevant to essentially the direction I want people to go? And to expand on that a little bit more, like I said, there's people are at different levels of what's called the buying cycle or the purchasing stage or the purchasing funnel. There's a lot of keywords, like words out there that people use to describe it. But essentially, you've got high buyer intent, so people who are kind of like just maybe searching. And so consider both, you know, someone who's like maybe how to hang a watercolor painting might not necessarily be looking for a watercolor painting now, but later, like they've probably proven, like that's a pretty good indicator that they've probably bought a watercolor painting in the past because they're trying to hang one, right? So that might be a more of an informational kind of content that you want to go for. Whereas those more commercial intent keywords, they're things like where to buy watercolor painting or, you know, local artists, dipping. You know, they're kind of more quite intent searches that, you know, people are looking for something specific and they're probably looking to buy. On a side note, those kind of keywords are also very competitive. So it's about balancing. Maybe go for the information keywords with the intent of getting them onto your email list, and that's when you can start to sell to them rather than maybe going for these more competitive keywords. And you can tell if they're competitive because if the big pages like Society6 or something like that are showing up for it, it's quite hard to compete against Society6 unless you know what you're doing. So, but if you're just, you know, if you're an artist and you're not a full-time SEO like I am, stick to the more, you know, that's a tip there. You can stick to the more informational content, and then figure out a way to capture them. And then you can build that trust, that relationship. And they're just like, yeah, I really like this stuff. I'm ready to buy. When they're ready to buy, you're front in mind. So that's my first tip, which is probably a bunch of tips. My second tip is if you're wondering what, okay, I know what keywords I want to target now. What do I what do I need to include? How long should it be? What are kind of supporting keywords should I include? Like all these things are, you know, they're out there, right? And so if you've got the answer is always going to be on the first page of Google for that search term. So just put your search term in and have a look. Who's the top 3, 4, 5 people showing up? What are the topics they're covering? What's the average word count of each? Because that'll tell me how long I should probably write it. You know, if people are searching for a how-to guide, that's going to be a lot longer than maybe someone looking for a definition or, you know, something like that. So it'll help you understand, okay, people want a short answer, or actually people want a longer answer. So I should probably write 2, 3, 4,000 words on this, whatever that might be. And then look at the topics, particularly looking at the headings and what's covered in those headings, because they're the core things that Google also looks at to determine your relevancy around the main keyword. So the answer is always going to be on the first page of Google. That's my tip there. You know, there's a lot of things that Google looks at, but if you can write content that, you know, if you can look at the the top of Google, get an idea of the topics covered, and then write something that's like 10% better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think those two together will get you 90% of the way. There's tools that can help with that. For example, figuring out what those, like if you've got a little bit of a budget, to figure out what those things are that Google looks at, there's a tool called Surfer SEO. And essentially it looks at, I think it's like 500 different attributes of a web page, determines what's the most important, including like how much you should write. These are the words you need to include in this many times. Like there's tools out there, and that's maybe for the more advanced person who's been doing this for a while and has a little bit more of a budget. But even without the tools, if you just look at the top pages on Google, that'll answer a lot of your questions. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know there's one thing to kind of also keep in mind with the SEO. It can take anywhere from 3 to 6 months to actually see a result. So yep. This is a long game. And I think the other important thing to kind of note there is that when you're putting together content, you're doing it for the people and not trying to game the Google system. Because Google, they'll constantly change the algorithm. And as long as your content and information that you provide is valuable, you'll continue to rank, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, the analogy I like to use for SEO, it's like a flywheel. So, you know, imagine a big concrete wheel, right? And you're pushing it. The first couple of pushes, it doesn't feel like you're doing anything. You're not moving, right? But once you get that momentum,
yeah,
slowing it down is super hard. And that's why I love SEO is, you're playing the long game. But once you're ranking, it's not like social media where you have to post every day or whatever that might look like. It's once you're ranking, it will just keep rolling. And just like a big flywheel, if you stop rolling for a week or two, it's still going to go. It'll slow down a little bit, but it doesn't come to a complete halt. And then all you have to do is just push it a little bit more, right? So that's the first thing that I love about SEO compared to, say, social. And then the next thing as well is I definitely agree. Good content, you want to write for the reader. But the way I look at it is you are writing for essentially two entities, the user, absolutely, but you're also writing for Google. So definitely I always put my user number one. I want to make sure the content I put out is awesome, but I also need to consider what I need to include to make sure Google understands what my content is about. Because if you can write the most amazing content as well, but if you don't make sure that there's at least some optimization there, no one's going to see it. It's not going to show up because Google doesn't understand what it's about.
I think somebody else needs to write the show notes on this one because there's a lot. So
I was going to say, I'll just give you my notes, Stephanie. But I first and foremost wanted to thank you for all the great information, Nathan. Like
a lot
of notes. I mean, I've got 4 pages of notes here. So this is amazing. We'll probably have to have you back because I feel like we have just scratched the surface. But you definitely need to go to Nathan's website at artignition.com.
Ignition.
Let me try that again. Artignition.com. ArtignitiOn.com. And we will have that in our show notes. And also follow him on Pinterest. He's on Pinterest, of course.
Love Pinterest.
Yes.
So yeah, definitely go follow him and send him all the questions because he knows everything. I don't know if we will be able to answer any questions. We'll just go see our show notes. But really great information. Really great.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Nathan. We really appreciate it. Like Rachel said, we'll have to have you back because I know after we implement some of this stuff, there's a way to even dive even deeper into SEO to go beyond what is just like image optimization and what it all means and how to look at our competitors, because, you know, we're not supposed to say we have competitors, but we do. And then how to look at it.
Right. I mean, you've just given us like,
and the steps is the scorecard, like the scoreboard.
I feel like you've just given us like, I don't know, the first page of what we need out of like a novel of like, I don't know, like a thick novel.
Yeah. No, definitely. And there's plenty of resources out there. I can list a couple out if you want, if people are interested in going down the rabbit hole. Like a couple of resources I recommend. And I have no affiliation with any of them. Two of them, though, I do know the owners. Like, they're just friends of mine, but I know their content's really good. So just as like a beginner one, there's a website called moz.com. moz.com. They've got like essentially like a beginner's guide, right? And it literally will walk you through like what is a keyword, what is link juice, as I mentioned previously, and it'll give you some really basic fundamental, how-to guides of how to do optimization and stuff like that. So that's a very beginner-friendly place to start. And then once you have a handle on what at least the foundations of, yeah, you know what SEO stands for, right? And you know what link building is and keyword research. Two places I recommend that you then check out is, one of my friends, his name's Matt Diggity. He runs a company called diggitymarketing.com. He has a really good YouTube channel, but if you've got the money, I highly recommend his course, The Affiliate Lab. It's excellent. It'll take you from a beginner to beyond advanced. Like the guys that are in there are guys making millions of dollars a year off SEO. It's a very, very high level, but it will take you from a beginner to that high level. And the community is amazing. I really love that community. And another, course as well, I do recommend. Is Authority Hacker. It's run by two guys called Mark and Gail. And again, very, very competent SEOs. They've got a course called, I think their beginner one is the Authority Site System. And then they have more advanced ones as well, which I've done, and it's amazing as well. So definitely.
That was Authority Maker?
Authority Hacker, authorityhacker.com. Yeah. So both companies, so they specialize in what's called affiliate SEO. So they make money through recommendations and stuff like that. But the SEO content, just straight up SEO content is brilliant. Like just even one of those by themselves will get you far more results than anything you'll find on Udemy or Skillshare or anything like that. These guys are in the game and they're some of the best in the business. And they're happy to share their knowledge.
So,
we'll add those to the show notes for sure. Awesome. Yeah.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much again. We enjoyed having you, and you're like a fire hydrant. Right. Information.
I'm trying not to be like,
No, but it's good. It's all good information. So we thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Artists Soar,
a podcast for artists by artists. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at hello@artistsoar.com.
And be sure to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts so that you can get more of us and we can bring in some sponsors to help you and help us.